When she came down the stairs, she heard the familiar clatter in the kitchen, where the cooks were already at work. If she put her head in, hoping for a taste of the first baking, they'd want to talk to her. She went on, past the kitchen, to the storeroom. Inside, on the right, if the custom hadn't changed, was a stone jar of trail bread. Anyone could grab a handful, if headed out to do early chores. The stable, busy as always by daylight, with the grooms and their helpers scurrying from stall to stall. She went to the stable office, where she found her name at the top of the list of the day's riders. Her father had done that, probably the night before, and she felt no gratitude. In another hand, someone had written in a horse's name, Sam.
Dama?
Mm?
When you are ready, Dama.
I'm ready.
Esme realized she ought to have taken a water bottle too, but she didn't want to go back for it. The groom went ahead of her, down the aisle of that barn and into another, and out again into the small training ring, where a bored brown horse leaned its chin on the rail where it was tied. A trail saddle, slicker, tied neatly behind the cantle, saddlebags, water bottle. Her father must have specified that, too. She hadn't needed to take the trail bread. A trail bridle, easy to unclip the bit so the horse could graze, a long lead line now clipped into the hitching rail's permanent loops. The groom offered his linked hands and she mounted. He unclipped the lead and handed her the end to tuck into the saddle ring.
He is good, but not too fast.
The groom opened the gate into the upper pastures. Esme turned the horse's head onto the trail that would, hours later, lead to her valley. Eventually, her stiff body relaxed into the rhythm of its walk, and she made herself look around. Morning light lit the recesses of the mountains on her right, and the vast, rolling pastures that spread from their foot as far east as she could see. She could remember riding out here from childhood. She had always taken a deep breath going out the gate, because it meant freedom. Thousands of hectares, dozens of trails, hidden wooded hollows, even in this open grazing land, and all the intricate topography of the mountains. No one could find her once she was out of sight of the house, or so she'd thought. Anger sat on one shoulder and grief on the other. The stink of old lies filled her nose, and she could not think of anything else. She had lived through the assault itself. She had, thanks to Seb Coron, outlived the assailant. But she had not outlived the effects. Worst of all effects, the lies. The horse ambled on, carrying her along as time did. Mere passage without change. Without the right change. Without healing. She could ride forever. The horse slowed, and she looked up to find they'd come to a fork in the trail. She legged it to the right, and it would not help. Nothing would help. Nothing could help.
Nothing on Altiplano, at least.
At the second fork, she turned right again. It was stupid going to the valley when she felt like this, and yet it had helped before. At other bad times in her life, she had gone there and found peace, at least for a while. She argued with herself, part of her defending her family even now. It wasn't true they had done nothing. The man was dead. But that was Seb Coron doing it for her father, not her father doing it for her. And what if Coron had lied about that? It wasn't true that her father hadn't cared. He'd done what he thought would help. But it hadn't helped, and he hadn't changed his mind. He, whose rule had been, if one thing doesn't work, try another. She rode beside the creek now, but its spring full rushing was too loud. In the shade of the trees, she felt cold. In the sun, she felt scorched. The horse sighed and pulled a little toward the water. She halted it, clambered off, feeling every stiff muscle, and let it down to drink. It laid its lips on the water and sucked. She could see the gulps rising up its gullet. She waited until it was finished, until it lifted its head and gave her a look, and then tried to stray off towards some buttonweed twigs. She didn't want to climb back on, but she had to. She walked instead, leading the horse until her legs felt better. By the sun, it was late morning. She didn't really want to go on to the valley, but where else could she go? Someone would ask, knowing where she always went. She pulled herself back into the saddle and rode on. The valley was smaller than she remembered, and she could feel nothing for it. The pines, the poplars, the creek, the meadow. She looked around it, trying to feel something. It was hers. It would always be hers. But all she felt was pain and emptiness. She slid off the horse and took the bit out of its mouth. She could walk around and let it graze for an hour before heading back. She remembered to loosen the girth, then took down a water bottle. Her body wanted food, but her mind did not. She made it halfway through the lunch the cooks had packed for her before her mind won the battle. She felt faint then and sat on the cold ground with her head down on her knees. The horse snatched at the grass nearby, the ripping and chewing of grass punctuating her thoughts.
What do I do?
Emptiness behind her, emptiness before her. In the middle of that emptiness, those few vivid moments when she had done something right and saved someone else. Harris Serrano. Vida Serrano.
What would they say now if they knew all this? Would it change anything?
She already had black marks against her. She had known from childhood that nothing in a military career is ever completely forgotten or forgiven. If she became not only the colorless, ordinary young officer from a backwoods planet who just happened to do the right thing once and save a Serrano neck, if she admitted that she was damaged, fractured, prone to nightmares, that had to put her in more jeopardy. That had to risk being thrown out, sent home. Except she had no home. Not this valley. Not anywhere. When her head cleared a little, she made herself drink again and eat the other half of lunch. This time it stayed down. It tasted like dust and wood, but it stayed down. She was home well before dark, handing over the dry, cool horse to the groom. Her stepmother hovered in the hall. Esme nodded politely.
I rode too far. I need a long bath and bed.
Could I send up a tray?
It was not her stepmother's fault. It had never been her stepmother's fault. She wasn't sure her stepmother even knew. If her father had kept it such a secret, perhaps she didn't know even now.
Thank you. Soup and bread would be fine. I'm just too tired.
Esme was able to get herself in and out of the bath, and she ate the food on the tray when it came. She put the tray back out in the hall and lay on the bed. She could just see the corner of her great-grandmother's note on its shelf. She didn't want to see it. She didn't want to see anything. The next morning was marginally better. Lucy, who clearly knew nothing, wanted her to come watch a schooling session with the brown mare. Esme could think of no polite way out of it, and partway through the session came out of herself far enough to notice that the problem with the canter depart was Lucy's failure to keep her outside hip in place. Lucy accepted this with good grace and offered a tube of liniment for Esme's obvious stiffness. They went in to lunch together. In the afternoon, her conscience would not let her avoid her great-grandmother any longer.
You are very angry with me.
Her great-grandmother did not look up from her embroidery. She had to use a thick lens and a special light, but she worked on it every day, Lucy had said.
I am angry. Mostly with him, I think.
I am still angry with him. But I am too old to put much energy into the anger. It's very tiring anger, so I ration it. A sharp word a day, perhaps.
Esme suspected humor at her expense, but the old woman's face had a soft vulnerability that she'd never noticed before.
I will say I was wrong, Esmea. It was how I was brought up, but it was still wrong of me. Wrong not to tell you, and wrong to leave you as I did.
I forgive you.
Don't do that. Don't lie to me, of all people. Lies added to lies never make truth. You don't forgive me. You can't forgive me that fast.
I don't hate you.
Don't hate your father either. Be angry with him, yes. He has hurt you and lied to you, and anger is appropriate. You need not forgive him too soon, any more than you forgive me. But don't hate, because it is not natural to you, and it will destroy you.
I'm going away as soon as I can, and I'm not coming back.
I know. Lucy told me about the herd. You are right. And I will argue for Lucy when the time comes.
Thank you.
It was all Esme could say. She kissed the old woman and went away. The days crept by, then the weeks. She counted them off. She would not cause a scandal by moving to the city for the rest of her leave, but she could not help watching the calendar. Her resolve had hardened. She would go and never return. She would find someone, not Lucy, who had no feel for it, but someone else, to become the valley's guardian. Nothing here meant anything to her now but pain and sorrow. The very food tasted bad in her mouth. She and her father had spoken each day of other things. She had been amazed at both of them, the way they could evade any mention of or reference to that disastrous afternoon. Her stepmother took her shopping in the city. She allowed herself to be draped in suitable clothes. She packed them into her duffel to take along. Then it was the last week, the last 5 days, the last four. She woke one morning, stabbed by the sorrow that she had been in her valley, but she had not seen it. She had to go one more time. She had to try to salvage something, some real memory that was also a good memory from her childhood. She had been riding almost every day, just to keep Lucy company. So if there was a horse free, she could go now, today. For the Dama, there was always a horse free. She felt, if not happy, at least positive, the pull of Fleet, probably, the knowledge that in just a few days she would be back in her new home, forever. The valley opened before her, magical again, as it had been in her childhood, as she would remember it in the moment of her death. It hardly deserved the name of valley, although when Esme had first seen it, she'd been so young it seemed large. Now she could see that what she remembered was merely a saucer in the side of the mountain, a grassy glade in which a small pool trickled away in a murmuring stream that would become a rushing, noisy stream only further down. On one side were the dark pines, secretive, rising from rocky ledges, and facing them were the white-boled poplars with their dancing leaves. In this brief mountain spring, the new grass was spangled with pink and yellow and white, the windflowers and snowflowers. A few weeks later, the tall scarlet and blue lupins would bloom, but now all the flowers lay close to the ground. Esme leaned back in the saddle. She wanted to breathe in and in, filling herself with the resinous scent of pine, the crisp scent of mint and grass, the sweetness of the flowers, the tang of poplar, and even the sour, rank smell of the lush weeds near the water. She could feel tears rising, and she clamped down on her emotions. Instead of crying, she dismounted and led her horse forward to drink from the pool. Then she removed the saddlebags and slung them over her shoulder. She led the horse to the fallen pine, still there after all these years, and unsaddled it. She put the saddle over the leaning trunk, then hobbled the horse before removing the bridle. The horse worked its way back out into the sunshine in the meadow grass, where it set to grazing. Esme settled herself on the convenient rock she had placed years before and leaned back against the saddle. She unbuckled the left saddlebag and took out the meat-filled pastries Veronica had packed. She would have 5 hours of peace here before she had to start back.